Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 280. Yes, big Caffeination number 280, rather. This is the You Gotta Believe edition, using a quote from one Tug McGraw of the 1980 World Series champion Phillies team fame, which is kind of funny because, you know what, it's one of those points in time where everything in your life kind of wraps around the same little set of circumstances. Right now, in case you are unaware, I am from Philadelphia, so I am a huge sports fan of most of the people, of most of the teams that currently reside in Philadelphia, and I know that there's two kinds of people out there. There's the kind of people who really like sports, and then there's the kind of people who could care less about sports, so I'm not going to go over it again and again and again. I just want to tell you I'm excited. I'm riding a nice high off of watching yet another game, so it's an uncertain set of circumstances that I currently find myself in, so it spills over into absolutely everything I'm doing. I'm not going to labor the point much more than that. Just going to say, on today's show, you're going to hear any and all about the following topics: superstition, voting, Diebold, fishies, Twitter, NASA, and robots. Kind of a little bit of a strange twist. The episode may be shorter or longer, depending on how much I babble on any one of the any given topics that we have thrown up there. I'm still reading / listening to Seth Godin's book, Tribes, read by Seth Godin himself. It's always more interesting to actually read or listen to a set of words written or read, rather, by the author himself. So if I've had the good fortune of writing a poem and having somebody else read it for effect, and it always came out so much so completely different from what I had intended, yet not incorrect, if that makes any sense to anybody. So when you're listening to Seth read his own words, it really kind of rings true because he's able to put the emphasis on the correct syllable. He's able to actually pick out the tiny little things which other people might have glossed over, other people might have said, you know, this is just a casual turn of phrase, and it really kind of gives you different insight into how the book is actually written and how, I guess, it should be read. So I highly suggest you give it a shot. There are certain issues that I've found that it's like, you know what, I don't really necessarily agree with absolutely everything you're saying, but Seth is incredibly good at motivating people, and I would highly suggest reading / listening to it. It's free if you just do a Google search for Tribes on audible.com. You just register for an account over there, and it's a free download. It's hard to beat, you know what I mean? So, all right, superstition involves a lot about the Phillies, which is why we still have the logo up there. Hopefully I won't have to do the late night podcasts too much longer, but that about wraps that up. We do have just a little bit of information to talk to you about today before we head on into the rest of the show. I wanted to talk to you just a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. If you have to travel for business, I have great news. There is an easier and more affordable way to do so. GoToMeeting, the award-winning service that lets you hold meetings over the internet with people in multiple locations. Just log on to GoToMeeting.com and start meetings with a click. Instantly, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. It's like meeting in person, but with much less expenses incurred and much less time consuming. Meet from your office, your home, your hotel room, anytime, anywhere. Plus, you can hold as many meetings as you want for one flat rate. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. You can do more and travel less with GoToMeeting. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all the crazy cool things that we currently find ourselves doing. So thank you very much to them. And the Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. It's also over at techpodcasts.com, where you can find a listing of all the other shows who have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. So all the great stuff that you find about my podcast, all the things that you may or may not enjoy, you're going to find a whole host of other podcasts that have all agreed to the same set of basic regulations that we all kind of self-police by. So it's a really kind of an interesting little place. You can head on over there and download any one of the podcasts, and it should be safe to listen to in the car with your kids or when you're in work or whatever else. So I think it's probably one of the better resources out there for finding content that you can listen to anywhere. I love listening to podcasts in work, but I need to kind of a quiet assurance that it's not going to pop out with an obscenity or some other thing that's going to get me in trouble. While I'm not necessarily offended by it, it can kind of put a damper on the social situation in the office. So, and headphones really aren't an option where I am. So it's really nice to have that kind of level of atmosphere floating around. All right, up next we have a huge amount of tech Croft and a decent amount of caffeine and food, and then we'll head you on out on your way. I know that sounds a little bit twisted. Like I said, really excited and at the same point in time, incredibly tired. So hopefully we'll be able to get through this episode with minimal editing. Last episode I had to cut and splice, and it looked kind of like a bad wiring job. So I'm hoping that this episode comes out a lot cleaner. Up first, we have the interesting little blurb coming out. It's a, let me see if I can get this correct. It's NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month. Now, I have for years been saying that I was going to start writing a novel, and I think that this is going to be the year that I actually do it. Now, what National Novel Writing Month is from November 1st from November 1st through the 30th, there's a contest, which basically just for your own enjoyment. There's no prizes or other stuff like that. But what it is basically a service that allows you to track your writing. The goal of doing this is to create a 175-page novel, roughly 50,000 words. So that's about it. 50,000 words written within the time frame of 1 month, from November 1st to November 30th. If you don't finish, no worries. It gives you a little track bar, tells you how far you are. You have to upload your different, the process as you're going along and doing it. I linked directly over to the in 10 easy steps how you do it. I think I'm definitely going to do it, and I think I might actually start up another podcast to actually deal with the novel that I'm going to be writing, because I'm really kind of excited. Like, I already have, I think I'm not necessarily going to follow the rules exactly, because I have a novel that I have a great idea for, at least I think it is, and I've been kicking around the first two chapters that I had written in a copy book for a while, and they're really short, but I kind of expanded on them, and I gave them new life when I started transforming them into digital copy. And I'm thinking, from here on out, if I work entirely in the digital realm, I'm wondering if I could hit that marker. I wonder if there's a way that I can actually get force myself through scheduling to actually get this thing out. So I'm wondering if there's anybody else who would consider doing this, not even saying that you don't share your complete works. What happens is, in order to validate your submission, you upload the entire thing at the end, and it scrambles them all about, and then says, yes, we've validated. You have approximately 50,000 words, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's kind of cool. It's one of the new things that I'm going to be trying to kind of schedule myself and make sure that I'm quietly productive, as opposed to these kind of spurts of activity where articles come out, other things get done, and then I kind of lapse into a daze. We are starting to enter into the period in time where I know that I have a little bit more free time laying around, so I'm able to actually focus on other stuff that I've really been kind of putting off to the side. And by and large, if you set a schedule to anything, if you say, you know what, every day for a half hour I'm going to write, you know, if you just set that time aside for yourself, you will find that you're so much more successful at doing what you're trying to do, you know, through a schedule. You know, for instance, with the podcast, I would not have done 280 episodes if I said, you know what, whenever I feel like it, there's going to be a Caffeination podcast. No, I kind of locked it down and said, you know what, Sunday and Wednesday nights, that's when it happens. If something else happens, I have to find a way around it. I don't like canceling episodes, and that's how it is. So that's kind of what the National Novel Writing Month is, except it's kind of more of a forced march towards publication. So it's kind of interesting. Just want to kind of put it out there. All right, up next, old games getting new life. Why not? There's a service that has been in limited beta for a while now called Good Old Games, which is a way that you can buy versions of old games and download them onto your computer. They have Earthworm Jim, Descent, and Descent 2, Descent 3, and the expansion pack, and a whole bunch of other different things out there. These are not free. These are DRM free, and they cost anywhere from $5.99 to $9.99. There's currently 43 titles. There's a whole bunch of different things that are up there. And you know what? I really like services like this because there are a lot of really good old games out there that didn't really either get as much play as they could have, or there's a new generation of people that can experience them. So I'd love the idea of this being out there and that people can actually experience them. So if you head on over to GOG.com, then you too can sign up for that if that's something that interests you. Moving right along, I posted this in my Twitter stream, which I'd like to send out a major apology for. If you are a non-sports fan and you're currently following me on Twitter, you have very short amount of time left when the sports deluge continues. I'm very sorry, but it's really interesting, and I think I kind of hit the nail on the head about why Twitter is as important to me this year as, you know, going to a bar might be to some other people. Since I don't have the ability to go to a sports bar for every one of the World Series games or anything like that, don't have the ability to experience the game with other fans, you know, in a very personal and very real setting. And I know there's other people out there who have the same issue. What the Twitter allows you to do is collect through fans, through people you know only loosely, and experience the game together. You can complain, you can kvetch, you can do anything you want, and you can give helpful tips, you can give interesting little stories. For instance, not this past night on the 26th, but rather the 25th of October 2008, we were watching a game. Halfway through the game, there was impending fantastic things that were about to happen, and the Comcast service in my area went out. Here's a little bit of a background on that, though. Comcast is a local Philadelphia company. So, Comcast blacked out, for all intents and purposes, the regular broadcast of the World Series for their hometown team for most of southwestern Pennsylvania and most of southern Jersey. So if you had DirecTV, which is a sponsor of the World Series, by the way, you would have been fine. If you had their high-definition package, you would have been fine. Or if you were still on their old analog boxes, you would have been fine. They've been trying to get all the old analog boxes in. After the connection blanked out, this was for about a half hour. This was really epically bad. And it was the entire cable selection was out, but pretty much the two hardest-hit areas were Saturday Night Live and the World Series. I was more interested in the World Series, but if you had unplugged your cable and plugged it into the TV directly as opposed to going into the box, you were able to pull an analog signal out of the cable and get it. So in case that happens again, Channel 13 is Fox, where the World Series is, just in case this happens out there and other people are need to be in the know, but I've been putting that information out on Twitter. One of the best parts about Twitter, and the reason that I'm actually telling you this slightly long-winded story, is because other people were complaining about this happening, and I already had the solution, so I was able to tell other people how they could get around the problem, and other people were able to start watching the series again, and other people were able to start watching the game sooner than if they had just contacted Comcast. So that's one of the things Twitter can do, and it's one of the things Twitter's incredibly good at. It's really good at disseminating information incredibly quickly. For instance, one of the reasons that the U.S. Army sees Twitter as a possible terrorist quote-unquote operation tool is because it has the ability to disseminate information quickly. For instance, when there was a earthquake in July in Los Angeles, I knew about it before any of the national news organizations knew about it. Why? Because I was following somebody in Los Angeles who happened to tweet when there was the earthquake. So I heard probably about 40 seconds after the earthquake started that there was an earthquake. I was able to contact my friends who lived in San Diego to make sure they were all right and find other people. And the information that was flowing over Twitter was incredibly useful at that point in time, because the people who were in the LA area got inundated with phone calls. The cell phone networks went down. SMS was delayed at the very best. However, some people were able to get information out, like, okay, I'm fine, would somebody be able to call my father? And, you know, I saw this happening a couple different times. Like, they would contact their friends or their close associates on Twitter and say, you know what, would you really be able to, or the person would offer, is there anything I can do to help you? And he says, oh, yeah, would you be able to call my father and let him know I'm all right? Or would somebody be able to call this number and see if this person's okay? I can't get through to them. And it's just, that's the really good part of Twitter, and for some reason, the U.S. Army sees this as a possible terrorist tool. You know what? If the ability to disseminate information clearly, quickly, and concisely is a terrorist tool, I would hate to see what they were able to do with email or, you know, letters. So I think it's kind of a little bit of a smoke and mirrors campaign there, but it's kind of ridiculous. If anything, if you were going to kind of pick one of the social networking tools that are out there that could possibly be used as a quote-unquote terrorist tool, I would think that Identica is one of the ones that could be, because the way that Identica works is exactly identical to Twitter, except it's an open source platform, so you can download the source code, open up your own small private network, and have it operate the same way that Twitter does, for the large part. So, theoretically, if somebody wanted to operate a network of very closely connected but loosely associated people, they could do so by setting up their own version of Twitter. They wouldn't necessarily need to use the general version of Twitter. Just putting it out there, it's not necessarily gonna happen that way. But I think it was kind of painting with too broad of a brush by the U.S. Army. Alright, moving right along to some more interesting stuff that I found online recently. This is an absolute unbelievable music video. This is not attributed to the band AC/DC, however it probably should be. This is a spreadsheet, which you really wouldn't associate with a band. This is a spreadsheet which is only playable on Windows, if you actually want to download the spreadsheet specifically. But there were two gentlemen by the name of Phil and Steve who work at a division of Sony BMG in London. They said this is the world's first music video in Excel format. Imagine an entire video shot through different clips of ASCII art rotating so that it actually looked like there was a live action happening on the screen. I don't know how they did it. I don't know if it's a continuous scroll or if it's just new page after new page, but it is unbelievable. It is beautiful when you really think about what they're doing with just characters in text blocks. That's it. So it is like true ASCII art, and it's an entire music video for one of AC/DC's new songs that came out. This is not supported by the band. However, it's kind of cool. So you can actually see, somebody actually did a video of it over at YouTube so that you can watch it, even if you have a Mac. But I just, this is the kind of thing that it really is cool to be involved in social media about, because this is new ground. This hasn't been done before. This is unbelievable, crazy stuff that would never really have any real value if the only kind of place you could put it is on the TV. This kind of content only works in inter-office mail. Why? Because things that are blocked by firewalls and all those kinds of corporate spam blockers, they're not necessarily, you know, they block video files, they block MP3s, they're not going to block a spreadsheet, they don't block PowerPoint, which is why you see a lot of jokes floating around in PowerPoint format lately. So it's kind of funny to see people getting around it, and this is just yet another new unbelievable way that they're doing it. So you have to watch the video, even if you don't like AC/DC, just to see the level of detail that they can actually pull out of a ASCII art video. So, all right, moving right along, if you remember on the last show, Caffeination number 279, I talked slightly about being involved in a wedding this past Friday. Marianne and Dave, we wish you all of the best going forward. You are absolutely perfect together. And on Thursday night, they gifted me with a USB memory watch as one of the, you're giving out favors to different people who are involved in the wedding. And it was, each gift was lovingly tailored to the person that it was designed to go to. And they gave me a rather stylish looking watch that has a flash drive on it. So I have 2 gigs of storage in my watch right now. First of all, it's awesome because I really actually needed another watch. I don't have a watch that actually works right now. And second of all, it was even cooler than that because it has 2 gigs of storage on it. So I have the link to the exact watch that I have over at thinkgeek.com. I don't know if this is where they got it, but it's really cool. So I highly suggest, if you have a geek in your life, it's very lightweight. I wasn't actually expecting that. If you have a geek in your life who needs a little time-telling help and also might want to have a little storage attached to them, you might want to check that out. All right, moving right along, we have a NASA concept car. It's not really 2 concepts you kind of put out there. When I say concept car, most people think like Detroit Auto Show. You think really sleek, smooth, svelte vehicles. You don't necessarily think this lumbering oil tank. And they're saying, you know, this is the height of fashion for a 2020 astronaut. It has 12 wheels, pressurized lunar rover concept car. You know what? This is the most decidedly unpimped concept car I've ever seen. I know NASA vehicles and NASA operations are supposed to be sparse because they're supposed to be just the facts. Basically, they're supposed to be the only things needed for survival, very few amenities or anything. It's just a strange-looking car, and even strange as concept vehicles go. It actually looks like airline tires on either side. It possibly is something along those lines, just a little bit smaller. But there's actually a compartment where 2 people can sleep and operate and move around for up to 2 weeks, and it's supposed to go operational around the year 2020. I would hope it would kind of look a little bit more like the science fiction stuff that we saw coming out a long time ago, but NASA decides to, you know, kind of go strange and bulky. Much less steampunk, much less, I don't even know what you would call the original, the original spaceman or spacecraft stuff that came out there. It's very unattractive looking. It's kind of just boring. It looks more like you'd find it in the boiler room of a school or something like that than you'd find exploring a continent on a foreign planet or something like that. So I just wanted to kind of put it out there because I thought it was kind of funny that it looked that weak. All right, moving right along, there's an article from over at NewScientist.com called The Fishbowl, Spaceships and Giant Stars This Week in Space. What it appears to be is that these vehicles are going to be able to take two people and you're sitting inside like a fish bubble so you can see the world around you. You can see absolutely everything at 360 degrees, but it doesn't really necessarily allow you to do much beyond that. It's going to be able to pull you back down, and depending on how long you're up there, it's going to cost you approximately $100,000 to experience. You know what? I love the idea of space exploration and everything, but I think it'd be even more cool if they actually put fish into orbit. I don't see dropping $100,000 on something like that, but you know, if you have the money to blow, that's probably not the worst thing you could do with your money. You could probably buy some kind of goofy fashion somewhere. But I guess if you're going to have to do it, you might want to do it in style and see the most amount of stuff that's out there. You could, of course, be like Lord British and just pay a foreign government to allow you to become an astronaut. But that's neither here nor there. All right, the next thing that we have up here is actually a press release from 1997. Apparently in 1997, there was an already designed robot, which actually looks very similar to some of the robots that are out now, that was capable of playing volleyball. Now, it appeared to be suspended from the ceiling and appeared to be able to do very limited things, but I'm kind of along the lines of Engadget right here. I don't understand why, if they're putting information about a robot out 11 years ago at this point, that we haven't seen a robot playing volleyball yet. I've seen lots of robots playing soccer. I've seen lots of robots doing all sorts of things. I've even seen robots serving coffee, beer, whatever else you have, but I have not seen a robot playing volleyball. So I just kind of wanted to pass it along as an interesting little fun fact that, you know, we've been getting these kind of press releases and these kind of the cool stuff is coming articles for a while now. It's just not ever here. All right, up next we have a tis the season kind of thing. Yes, it is the season for voting information, so I just want to have two little articles that I found relatively useful, and hopefully you will as well. Again, this is hopefully nonpartisan information, so just to hopefully allow people to get as much information about the voting process as possible. This Week in Review, the Get Equipped to Vote came up from over at device.com, which is basically a rundown state by state of how easy it is to actually hack the vote, quote unquote. That is to say, the lack of checks and balances, the lack of security associated with the different kinds of voting machines that are currently out there, be they electrical, optical scan, punch card, lever, or paper. New York, the state, is the most likely to not get hacked because they're an entirely paper ballot system, something that I was kind of stunned by. The only problem that I have with their system is they say Pennsylvania is incredibly likely to get hacked because there is, you know, a heavy reliance on electronic voting. And I am somebody who thinks that all voting systems, even if they are electronic or no matter what, should be very free and clear and out in the open. This is how they operate. There should be no patents on them. There should be no hidden wires. There should be nothing out of the ordinary. There should be nothing out of the level of scrutiny. It's not because, you know, I want somebody to be able to get in there and change information. It's because I think that security through obscurity is no security at all. You know, it's you need to be able to point to any point in the process and say this is as free and as transparent as possible, and anybody who says otherwise has something to hide. That's the only way I can look at it. All right, so Pennsylvania is currently very heavily into the electronic system. The only thing is, I don't know what kind of voting machines that are actually in place in the polling places that I use, because the pictures that they have there don't necessarily match up with what I remember. So I'm going to try and take a couple of snaps to see when I actually go in to vote on November 4th to see if I can kind of figure out what machines they're using. Because we used to have the tiny little lever ones for a while ago, where you put the tiny little metal levers down, then you put the giant lever to actually, I guess, punch a card in the back end. But or it could just be a giant deference engine. Who knows what happened? But, I mean, that's the problem. If you don't know how your vote is counted beyond that, there's a lot of leeway for malarkey to happen. All right, and up next we have possibly one of the stupidest stories that I've ever seen. If you go on Diebold's website, Diebold is a maker of voting machines, you can buy replacement access keys for $550 a set US or $690 a set Canadian, which doesn't even really make sense anymore because the Canadian dollar is worth more than the American dollar right now. So you're actually charging the Canadians much more than you're charging the United States people, but that's neither here nor there. You can buy keys that will allow you to access voting machines. There is no easy way to validate that somebody is supposed to be able to get this key. That's the thing that I'm looking at here. It's like, if I'm going to be able to say, all right, you know what? All the master locks out there, you can buy a replacement key for absolutely any master lock. All you need is the number on the bottom. It's like, yeah, that is true, but, you know, it's like saying, well, you know what? We're just going to give you the combination. This combination will work on absolutely anything out there. So just tell us, you know, how big's the lock? So as long as you know the general kind of machine, you can buy a replacement key for it. How ridiculous is that? This is one of those things where it's like, there shouldn't be a key on it that has that kind of access to it. You know, it should be very open and clear and out, and I just don't know. It's one of those things I'm kind of stunned about. All right, up next, we have a little information about an urban defense arsenal. Now, I've seen people carrying pepper spray in their purses. I've seen people carrying tasers in their purses. I've seen the pearl-handled pocket pistols. I've seen a whole bunch of other different things out there, but I've never seen something that packs quite this much heat. This is a pepper gun, a laser, a flashlight combo, and it is seriously hefty. This thing weighs 2.2 pounds. This thing weighs as much as a laptop. It looks like it should be deployed over the shoulder, but it actually, what it is there's a high-intensity light on the one side, so it zaps you with a laser. It shoots you with a pepper spray bullet, rapid fire. So these tiny little paintball-sized pepper spray capsules actually shoot out rapid fire to stun different people who are attacking you. It can shoot out up to 5 of them in semi-automatic fashion, and the laser is directed for accuracy. So I'm pretty sure it's not like a laser where you can cut or burn or anything like that. It's more to kind of target where you plan to send your shots of pain. I just thought it was kind of crazy. This is a little bit more over the top than I've seen. If you need this level of device to secure your safety, you probably might just want to invest in a license to carry at that point. There's not really much difference, and you're probably less likely to shoot yourself than you are to set a pepper spray ball off in your face. So just wanted to kind of put that out there because I thought it was pretty ridiculous. And all right, from the very expensive things that we've seen recently to one of the absolute least expensive solutions to anything I've ever seen, I really need to look into this. This is a way to bend a coat hanger to create your very own laptop stand. Now, if you don't believe me, there's an entire list on how to do this over at Instructables, and the original article is over at geek.com, which is where I linked it to. I'm going to be trying to create this for my MacBook Pro to see if I can do this in work, because I don't like leaving it on the table. It kind of overheats. It's not very... it's just not set up correctly. I need to find a different way to hang it around or use the laptop. So I just wanted to kind of push that out there as a rather cheap and inexpensive solution. All right, that about wraps it up here for the Tech Cruft section. We have a little bit of stuff in the caffeine and food section that will send you on your way merrily, hopefully. Just wanted to give you a little quick rundown. This is, of course, the Caffeination Podcast. If you are listening to this podcast on a stream or any other device, which you have missed the first half of it somehow, or I babbled past it, you can find this and all the other episodes like it just over at www.caffeination.com. Coincidentally enough, that is caffeination.com. And the Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If you have any kind of feedback, information, whatever else you'd like to send our way, we are up for discussion or whatever else you feel like. It's over at caffeination@gmail.com. I'm usually relatively good about getting back to people, so I think I'm almost caught up to everybody who's emailed me recently. Thank you very much for all of your comments and kind wishes and a couple little things that you'd like to change. We're working on all of your suggestions, I promise you. All right, up next we have the caffeine and food section here at the Caffeination Podcast. It is a very big part of what we are here at the Caffeination Podcast. I guess you could call it the linchpin of what we do. And the first little thing that we have up here is the cookies are in. I've had a bit more to add, but the article pretty much says it all. We had a good friend of mine, Norbert Davis, actually put an article together for me that talked a little bit about the BuzzStrong's caffeinated cookies. And it was a very good article, and it was kind of hard to wrap my head around what they were talking about. So what it appears to be is there's a cookie that's made instead of water, they used coffee. And Yeah, you're hearing me just as much as I'm telling it. But it's they're supposed to be flavored. They're supposed to be caffeinated to a certain extent. Four cookies are supposed to equal one cup of coffee. So I was kind of interested, and I was intrigued, and I really liked Norbert's review of it, so I posted it up there, and he did a very good job explaining it, took a whole bunch of wonderful product shots, and then he did a very kind thing and actually sent me a box of the cookies. And I've had several cookies at this point in time, and I have to agree with almost every single point that Norbert made. They are incredibly aromatic. They have a wonderful smell to them. My wife does not like coffee. Unfortunately, she does not like the cookies. However, fortunately, that means there are more cookies for me. I had four cookies. It did not really hit me as hard as a cup of coffee I think would have, but I usually have big cups of coffee, so I'm more than happy to kind of put that claim off to the side, because I think it did a very good job. I think they're actually an interesting way of caffeinating yourself, and I don't think they should be primarily marketed based on their caffeine, because they're a very moist cookie. They're very good, and I think they're only... I think you can only actually get them in California at this point in time. So Norbert was kind enough to send them to me, and thank you so much. They're really good. I'm kind of trying to pace myself because they are so good, and they're not readily available around here, so I just want to make sure that I savor them while they're here. So thank you very much, Norbert, for passing them along. And anybody who's out there who happens across these things, if you like coffee and you like chocolate with tiny little hints of caramel overtones, then you probably would like these cookies. Well, especially if you like cookies. Everybody likes cookies. All right, up next. Next, we have a little bit of an article about margaritas in your car. I don't know why you would need to do this, because anybody I know who has the ability or the need to make margaritas in their car, they're usually going to a tailgate. And tailgates are usually kind of configured to allow for all kinds of other apparatuses to be used off of the car's battery or a generator or whatever else you have at the actual tailgate site. So I don't really think that's a good idea to have a margarita maker that has the ability to run off a car jack. It's just one of those things where the potential for abuse is relatively high. I thought it was kind of interesting, but unfortunately, the $110 price tag just kind of blows it over the top. It's like, I think we have a margarita maker or a smoothie maker upstairs, which is the same thing with just a less cool name, and I think that was like $35. So you buy that, and you buy the little adapter plug. If you really need to make margaritas in the back seat or the front seat or wherever else you happen to do it, it's just a lot simpler and a lot cheaper. So come on, be smart, people. All right, next little thing that we have for you here, the last little thing we're going to talk to you about here today on the Caffeination Podcast is caffeine gummy bears. You know what? There's certain things that are out there that I think that should be sacred. And one of those things is gummy bears. They're kind of one of those candies that everybody associates with childhood, or at least most people I know associate with gummy bears with childhood, and these are called energy gummies. They're citrus flavored, which again, I don't really associate citrus and gummy bears, but they're mildly caffeinated. The packaging is apparently attractive, and they apparently taste very good. This is from over at the Examiner.com. It's from Newark, but there's just something really kind of wrong about gummy bears that give you a little bit of an extra caffeinated kick. I really like the idea of these things, but the execution is always not there. So maybe if they were tiny little coffee cups, even in gummy form, I think I would rather have them, or tiny little like honey, I don't even know, or whatever flavor they would happen on. If they were a different shape other than the iconic gummy bear shape, I think I'd be a little bit better off. All right, that about wraps it up here for the Caffeination number 280. It's been a kind of a crazy episode. Hope I was able to hang it together enough for you to kind of understand what I was saying here. It's been a great weekend here in Philadelphia, wonderful sports weekend with all the teams that anybody would care to mention winning and winning handily. So I'm ecstatic for the week ahead. This has been episode, like I said, number 280. This has been recorded on Monday, the 10th or the 27th of October 2008. If you were looking for this episode, you can find this episode and all of the other ones just like it, except with different content, some a little bit better, over at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. This is, or was rather, the Caffeination Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.